coming up on today's Compassion Radio.
It was beautiful to see them begin to support each other. Mm. And they had such a beautiful sisterhood. They took care of each other. And oftentimes you would see one mom corralling four or five children while the other moms were in class. They formed a deep bond. These are the people who are making the trek over the mountain into Beirut to take care of the Lebanese people in Beirut after the explosions. They are giving back to this country that has taken them in.
Psalm 68:6 says, God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing. But the rebellious? Well, they live in a sun-scorched land. Hello, friends. Bram Floria here with Compassion Radio, the daily journal of God's people going about God's business, and often in the places that nobody else is willing to go. Thanks for joining us today. You know, those words from Psalm 68 have never been more true than right now in the Middle East. When ISIS obliterated the homelands of a vast population in Syria, Iraq, and Kurdistan, they inherited a scorched wasteland of their own making. And those driven out have encountered nonstop perils and dangers. And yet, something special is happening in their midst as refugees and sojourners on the lands of other nations. Especially in Lebanon, refugees are finding themselves not only as recipients of compassion, but discovering that God can use them to bring healing to others. And it's the Christians that are teaching them how to do it. Never would they have expected that their hosts would need their help. But such is the economy of heaven sometimes. Well, the news comes rolling in today about our friends and their situation in Lebanon. It's been a tough week there. Mm-hmm. And because it's fresh news, I thought it would be important for us to sit down and talk about it a little bit today. Mm-hmm. Sandy, welcome back to the microphone.
Thanks. It's happy, sad to be here.
Yeah. We learned to love the people and the country of Lebanon because of the time we spent there doing some important work. And because so much of God's most important work in the world today is being done in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. First of all, recap for us your experience there in the past couple of years.
Well, as we talked about before, our daughters and I went to Lebanon in 2018 over Mother's Day to celebrate some very special mothers in Lebanon. And these were mothers that we met through Together for the Families in Syrian refugee camps there in the Bekaa Valley.
Now, before we move on, it is the focus ministry of our project for this month because we know that the work they do is very effective. Yes. And it was time for us as Compassion Radio to get back into doing projects.
Yeah.
Which means basically that we are trusting that God will supply the basic needs for the ministry to be on the air. And that anything above and beyond the baseline budget, I mean, not socking away anything for the future, but every dime above the bare necessities for us to be on the air would go to this project. And that is to help the refugee families that are in the Bekaa Valley, because it's not slowing down. No. The camps are growing, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So again, tell us about your first experience with the ministry there.
Well, we went into some of those camps. And when I say camps, it's just basically the corner of a field. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in this valley, this very fertile valley that we talked about before. And we met some amazing young women that were not much older than our daughters. And in fact, a couple of them were exactly the same ages as our daughters.
And had multiple children.
And had children because they were betrothed to men who had escaped Syria or to families. And so they had gone to be with them, apart from their own families, that some remained in Syria. Mm-hmm. And they had no idea whether their families were still alive or not at the time we met them. But these women were extraordinary, and we also met women who were coming into the center that Together for the Families has built there in Zahle to teach basically kindergarten and early childhood learning for the children, but also teaching these young mothers, a lot of them children themselves, how to be mothers. They had sewing classes, teaching them how to cut hair, teaching them how to fix hair, teaching them how to do household, not just chores, but cooking and mending and just taking care of their children. They had basic classes on child care and infant care, because like I said, many of them were just really young women themselves.
And it's not just so much that they were young. I mean, I was there a year before you. Mm-hmm. It was the issue of not having your family unit around you. So many of them have been separated or severed from their family groups. And when you're raised in a culture where kids marry young, I mean, 15, 16 years old is not uncommon for people to go ahead and start a family, but they would always be living under the roof of the family that they're married into. Mm-hmm. So there's always a clan idea.
Yeah.
there's always multiple people helping, and you're learning skills along the way, getting your education on the hoof, as you say. Mm-hmm. And so those kids, I call them kids because they're like high schoolers, who end up getting married and then having no support network around them because they were chased out of their country, right, and their parents are back trying to hold the farm together or escape some other route, whatever. They would prefer their children. They would save every dime they had and scratch every ounce of silver they could find to pay the emigration of their kids to get out of the war zones. And there they sit in these camps with no social network, had no idea what was coming, and now they got to figure out what to do, and the only thing they've got going for them is maybe one or two meals a day being brought to them by private charities. And then people like Together for the Family emerge out of their Christian commitment to care for the poor in their midst. Again, these are people that did not start poor. These are professionals. These are people who have businesses, who are shopkeepers, who are lawyers and doctors, and who run large agricultural concerns. These are, for the most part, fairly wealthy families. The poorest of the poor in Syria and Iraq had to stay put. They couldn't do anything but walk. So the ones you were meeting were people that, up until that time, had known a lot of privilege.
Exactly.
And then suddenly they discover, because of circumstances, that they're poor.
Yeah. It was beautiful to see them begin to support each other. And they had such a beautiful sisterhood in that center that Together for the Families ran. They took care of each other. And oftentimes you would see one mom corralling four or five children while the other moms were in class to do something. And then they would switch off. And so they just began to take care of each other's children. Yeah. They formed a deep bond. One of the things I want to say about these women and about these people that have been ministered to by Together for the Families, these are the people who are making the trek over the mountain into Beirut to take care of the Lebanese people in Beirut after the explosions. That's what they're doing now. They are giving back to this country that has taken them in.
No small idea. If you think about immigrants coming to America along our southern border, we think about Mexicans or Guatemalans or Hondurans that are escaping drug violence or economic impoverishment and trying to find some way forward in their lives. We see them as being people who are destitute, perhaps. We don't think about them being enemies, as if they were actually part of an enemy force.
Correct.
In Lebanon, it's different because for 30 years, the people of Syria were forced by their totalitarian government to take up arms and to occupy most of Lebanon. But Lebanon was invaded by Turkey, by Syria, even by Israel for a while, and crowded into the metropolitan area around Beirut. And it was only in the past 15 years or so where the territory was given back to the sovereignty of Lebanon. And so the Bekaa Valley, where these camps are, is now occupied by all of the children and grandchildren of those who came to occupy and steal the land away from the Lebanese. These are the people you're talking about here who are now going over the mountain as rescue workers and as servants of the Lebanese people. And that really baffles the mind of so many Lebanese. How would these people, who we are supposed to be so adamantly opposed to, because they are the children of our oppressors, why would they come to us and serve us? It's a very humbling experience for Lebanese to be at the mercy, so to speak, of those who they had little tolerance and mercy for themselves after their own civil war. It's just a very, very interesting mix of humanity and the kind of steps that the Christians are taking to encourage those refugees to become servants, to follow in the way of Christ, is really teaching them how to become disciples.
Yeah. Well, if you'll remember from our interview that we did with Trevina and Belinda Bauman, she said that these people stepped up when they heard about the explosion in Beirut. They came to her. And they came and said, what can we do? How can we help these people? And her first instinct was, you can't go over there. It's too dangerous for one thing, but they won't accept you.
That was her assumption.
That was her assumption. And so initially, she went with just a few people to test the waters and saw that the people of Beirut were so desperate after this explosion that they were willing to accept help from anyone that would offer it. So she went back across the mountain and said to them, let's organize, let's get ourselves together. And these people began to bring food from their own stores. They began to bring blankets, bandages, and medicines that they had themselves, that they had somehow been able to stockpile themselves to take over to Beirut to minister, to care for the people of Beirut.
And care for is an important statement because we're not just talking about gathering supplies and then taking them and dumping them off.
Right.
These refugees who were living in the Bekaa Valley are going over into Beirut with their own stores of medical supplies and food and giving it out and binding up wounds. They're actually going into the neighborhoods to find out who still is in need, who still has a broken bone that's
walking
not been treated.
Street to street, yeah.
And meeting the people.
And after that initial encounter, they begin to realize these people also need doors for their homes or windows or repairs done to their homes. And so they are now organizing some of the young men to go over to repair some of these homes, to clean them out. And they've already done a lot of this, have cleaned out many of these apartments that are still habitable, gotten the glass and the debris away from the doors and the windows and everything, and are beginning to go in and repair these buildings so that the people can live safely in their own homes.
Yeah.
One of the things that we need to mention is that since that blast, there has been another fire.
A major fire last week.
In the port. And that's been a devastating development.
It covered what was left of Beirut in the choking smog of tire smoke. I mean, think about how bad rubber smells when it burns. An entire depot of recycling and new supplies of tires for all of industry in the Middle East went up in smoke in a day and just socked in the entire basin in the putrid smog. And then today, one of the showpieces that actually survived the initial blast, a brand new shopping center designed by one of the Middle Eastern architectural community's most famed architects, suddenly, and no one knows why, went up in flames today. And they've been fighting that all day.
Yeah.
And the people's response has been, how many more hits can we take and still be Beirut?
Right.
It's like in 2 weeks' time, all of those 15 or 20 years of civil war getting packed in, the same kind of trauma. So people are just in shock right now.
Well, and it's causing a lot of smoke damage as well. Yeah. They did get the tire fire under control, so that's been contained, which is a great thing. And now they're trying to figure out what is going on with this other fire in the shopping center.
The West has institutions that can take care of crises. At least we should. And I don't want to say that one is better or is worse than the other because of their circumstances.
Right.
But we do know here in the States that those who have suffered the fires out in the West have been traumatized by all that in the same way as Middle East disasters have been the past couple of months. There is no discounting whatsoever how horrible it's been for hundreds of thousands of families in the United States.
Yeah.
It is also fair to say that we have in our law and in our financial system mechanisms by which over time people can rebuild their lives.
Yes. As hard as it is.
And that is a richness of our society, that we have the institutions capable of dealing with these things. Even in a time of coronavirus, if necessary, you can go declare bankruptcy and get your day in court. It may be a long time to get there, but our government has even stepped in to help people who are at risk of losing their homes because they don't have a job right now to stop foreclosures and stop evictions. They've made that effort on behalf of the working man and woman in this country to try to slow down the economic collapse that could be coming here. The Middle East has none of that. Friends, before we jump back to today's interview, I just want to remind you that Compassion Radio is a communications ministry, and it depends on the faithful support of you to keep bringing inspiring stories to the air each day. Our vision partners support us monthly with gifts large and small, and make it possible for us to take you to the very front lines of faith. Whether you join our vision team or make a one-time gift, thank you for believing in and standing by this ministry. We're here to bring you real good news in every situation. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478 to make your gift and to request our special offer this month, the CD of Michael O'Brien's marvelous Crown Him music project, as our thank you. You can also text the word compassion to 53445 to give right through your phone or visit our website, compassionradio.com. Thank you, friends, for everything you've done and what you'll do today. We love you. And now, back to the interview. Our government has even stepped in to help people who are at risk of losing their homes because they don't have a job right now to stop foreclosures and stop evictions. They've made that effort on behalf of the working man and woman in this country to try to slow down the economic collapse that could be coming here. The Middle East has none of that. So right now, because of the economic collapse in Lebanon over the past 8 months, where 80% of the value of the currency has just evaporated. And now with the destruction of the port and 80% of their capacity to import and export gone, there is no mechanism for them to rebuild or to figure a way back. How do you get a bridge loan in order to get something rebuilt you can live in? How do you clean out your house? How do you find enough materials just to board up your apartment so you can live in it again? Mm-hmm. They don't even have that.
Right.
So it is the Christians and the like-minded people of conscience that they are able to work with that are going and doing the things that their entire economic and political system right now cannot.
Right, right.
And that's why I think it's so astounding. Imagine if the church in America stepped up and said, we'll take care of all of the problems of coronavirus in our economy, all the problems of the fires out west. We dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be astounding and it'd be marvelous if it happened. But even the churches that I know would look at the problem we have in America and say, there's no way we can touch that.
It's too big, yeah.
There is not a church I've heard of in Lebanon that has not said, tell me what to do.
We want to
be involved with the solution.
What can we do?
We will be the ones to bring not just the gospel, but compassion and survival to these people. They're our countrymen. They're our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
They take it very, very seriously.
Yeah, they do. They are gripped with grief for their fellow countrymen and for their neighbors. Like you said, the refugees consider them to be their neighbors and they consider them to be their protectors in some way because they have taken them in. And seeing the work that they're doing, reaching out to the people of Beirut, is just astounding. It's a beautiful thing to see. And that they willingly have volunteered and gone and provided for them. One of the things that Trevina said was, we don't want them to bring their food.
Mm.
We want to try and raise the money so that we can purchase food, although it's very difficult now. Mm. But that is one of the things that we want to help them do, is to raise financial support so that they can purchase food and supplies to take in to Beirut to these people who are so devastated by the explosion and now by these fires that are also engulfing the city.
Here's a little backstory I learned on my trip to Lebanon back in 2017. When it came time to figure out how they were going to take care of all the refugees that were flooding in to Lebanon from Syria. Syria was a land of plenty because it was well managed economically for quite a while. Large state farms and things. A lot was very socialist in that the government had taken over large tracts of land and had leased it back out to people who would then produce. They were kind of like high-level sharecroppers.
Okay.
That's where their economic system was built. Nonetheless, they were very productive, and so they fed the Middle East, much like Israel was feeding Africa and even Central America and South America with their produce.
Hmm.
Syria was doing something similar with their grain exports and stuff to all the Middle East. When the refugees started arriving from Syria, most of them were professionals, not agricultural workers, mm-hmm. but there were some that were. They didn't know what to do to feed them because the UN only had so much they could allocate for private distribution,
mm-hmm.
and there was no big public land. Lebanon does not have enough land to have a lot of public land.
Right.
So they started shoehorning them into the corners of fields. And they started asking around, how do we let them or enable them to take care of themselves without having to resort to stealing?
Mm-hmm.
The leaders, religious leaders in the area, came together and said, well, there's a principle we have in our scriptures. And it is similar in some texts of Islam as it is in our Old Testament for gleaning.
Right.
And there is a legal provision for that, for how to take care of those who have nothing. It was a whole regiment of rules about mm-hmm. what you could harvest, what you should not harvest, how you make the gleaning available to those who have need,
mm-hmm.
and how you protect those who do. It is the story of Ruth.
Right, who was a refugee.
Friends, look at the roots of your faith. The ancestors of Jesus himself have been refugees
mm-hmm.
more than once.
Yeah.
The Word of God provided for their survival. In the simplest way I can look at this in the gospel-centered view of the Scriptures, the Father was looking out for the Son and making sure that over all those generations that Jesus would be able to survive to get to the place where he could accomplish what his Father sent for him to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
God still has purposes for each generation. There's no doubt about that. And that the very principles of gleaning that he instituted in the Scriptures that predated all of our religion of Christianity, predated all of Islam, going all the way back to the very beginning, God provided a way for us to be civil and compassionate to each other and to do it with rules
mm-hmm.
that would not make it appear that someone was taking advantage of somebody else. Those were the rules that were implemented at the beginning of this refugee crisis that made it possible for those refugees in the Bekaa Valley to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still in place. So some of this produce that you're talking about, Sandy, taking them to the survivors of the blast in Beirut, is from their own gleanings.
Yeah.
That they are harvesting the crops and picking through those which were discarded and find out which is edible, which is safe, which is not. That is part of that whole biblical construct of gleaning and provision from God's hand.
Mm.
That is being played out even now to save lives in the inner city of Beirut.
Right.
That's the kind of God that we have, and it's the kind of people that he puts on site to do his work. And Together for the Family is one of those key instruments right now in making it possible. And because it's a Christ-centered ministry, the principles of Christ's compassion are playing out in the refugees that they're ministering to, who are then becoming little Christs and ministering to people in the bombed-out areas of West Beirut.
Yes, absolutely.
I think there's no coincidence whatsoever that God made that happen.
Hmm.
And that he's making it possible for us to be part of that, especially at a time where we might be able to have a little bit of compassion and empathy too, realize that, you know, we could be facing this kind of situation too if no one stepped up for us.
Yeah.
Thank God we've got institutions and financial systems and political systems that are stable enough to help us in our time of need in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That God would use us in that kind of wealth of opportunity for a future and a hope that we have to be able, through the church, to do the same thing for the Middle East now is a marvelous thing. And just a little bit out of our hands can make a huge difference there. There's no doubt about that.
Well, Trevina told us that $30 will supply a family's need for a month's time.
Yeah.
That is not a lot.
And this is in what was, until just recently, a first world country. You know, we think about $30 a month going to places like Ethiopia or India and stretching out that far. Because of their efficiency and because of the infrastructure they've already built to house them and to take care of these refugees, they can, in similar fashion to what they would have done in a third world country, provide enough calories and enough health and enough services to a family to sustain them for that same kind of money, which is astounding to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we ask you to step up, friends, and be part of this project. Any other thoughts we could add right now as we're thinking about the current situation in Lebanon?
I would just encourage our listeners to please pray for the people of Beirut, for the people of Lebanon. They are devastated. I know that we've all been experiencing trauma in 2020. It's been a very tough year for most of us, for all of us. I don't believe there is a person on the planet that has not been profoundly touched by tragedy in some way during this year. But I would just encourage you to pray for others. Pray for those who need to know that they're being thought of.
Yeah.
And ask God to give you insight in how to pray.
Yeah.
Because he may just spring it on you. He may just bring something to mind that seems completely out of the blue.
Yeah.
But that is his heart for you to pray for others.
And God is pleased when we speak back to him the things that he is deeply passionate about.
Right.
And he is so gracious to us to share his passions with us and trust us with them so that we can be partners with him in the solutions and receive from his hand what's necessary to become a blessing to others. So I'm praying that for our listeners in Compassion Radio as well, that we will be good receivers of what God has for us so we can become good givers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, learning how to receive well because we've learned to give generously. Friends, thanks so much for joining us on today's program. We'll have a report come up tomorrow about what's going on in Greece with the refugees there after the big campfires at Moria camp that we visited just 3 years ago as well.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Oh,
Remember, friends, your giving this month doesn't just support this unique media ministry. Every dime beyond our baseline budgeting is going to support the relief and rebuilding efforts in Beirut, Lebanon, led by wonderful Christian ministries already on the ground and doing tremendous work. I strongly encourage you to give above and beyond this month so we can make the most impact possible. Your gift of time each day is a genuine treasure to us. Knowing that you're being challenged to live out your faith like never before is a wonderful encouragement to us as well. You can reach me directly at the following address, bramfloria@compassionradio.com. However you reach out, know that we're in this ministry and this work for you and because of you. Just call or write us today to help keep us on the air and in the field. Call 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And jump in anytime at CompassionRadio.com. We're waiting for you, friends. Hop on board.